Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Which one is that? That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys.
That's... Yeah. They have asked for that, really.
Yeah, you can laugh. I was the World Cup.
I'm a little bit of an idealist. But having said that, I want to be like me.
Well, you don't know what you're talking about.
What did you know?
I managed to stay alive for 6 days.
I'd say it to your face, and I'll say it to you now.
I'm down Swanfield, and we'll see them, won't we?
What you doing down here, you shawnee man?
Well, the sun shone all weekend for most of us. It's a bank holiday Monday, and the country is currently experiencing the longest unbroken streak of wins by our international team under the current management. There's just so much to feel good about. Hello and welcome to today's Second Captain's Podcast. I hope you've all had a lovely bank holiday weekend so far. Ken and I, of course, do not believe in bank holidays. Never have, never will. Hello there, Ken.
Hello there, Kieran. How are you?
I'm good. That winning streak now stands at one win, but we will be looking at making it a round two-match winning streak tomorrow night as we take on the mediocre Magyars, and the feeling around the country is one of giddy excitement, Ken. You've been out in the field, I presume, this weekend, gauging the thoughts of the nation.
But what are you talking about?
What? The Ireland soccer team? It's what everyone's talking about. Have you not walked down the street?
What did you call the Magyars?
Mediocre. They're mediocre Magyars. Well, they're not mighty, so they're mediocre.
And why are you saying that?
I just think they're there for the taking.
When was Hungary's last defeat?
I think they may have like plodded to an uninspiring draw last week, shorn of their best player. I just kind of feel like they're up against the ropes. They're begging to be put out of their misery. And I know just the team to do it.
Hungary have not lost in 10 matches, of which they've won 7. Their last defeat was on 6 September 2020 to Russia. They lost 3-2 to Russia.
What team knows better than us that winning streaks, or that the streaks are bound to come to an end eventually?
Well, all I'm saying is you call them mediocre, but actually you look at the results and the results are very good.
Are they mighty? You know, are they mighty results?
Well, they won in Belgrade, which we couldn't do quite recently. Mm-hmm. They drew 3-3 with Poland in a World Cup qualifier, and that took Robert Lewandowski rescuing the Poles. Obviously, they don't. Mm. I don't know if you also noticed Scotland's result.
We informed the listeners. I mean, obviously, I did, but
the result was Luxembourg 0, Scotland 1. Shea Adams scored the goal for Scotland. Luxembourg had a player sent off in the first half.
Boys, we fucking discipline.
All I'm saying is that Scotland are in England's group in the Euros.
If you want some, I'll give it, yeah.
They're going into that tournament, and this was what they did. So all I'm saying is, you know, sometimes it's good to look around and see what's happening, to contextualize things a little bit. What do they know of Ireland football results who only Ireland football results know? You know, so look and spread the net a little bit wider. And that's really what I've been what I've been trying to do over the weekend.
Elsewhere in international football, the Copa America is in danger of descending into complete farce. It was due to be co-hosted by Argentina and Colombia, but it was taken away from Colombia at short notice 2 weeks ago because of social unrest in that country, then from Argentina a couple of days later after a surge in COVID cases there. It now looks like it's going to go ahead in Bolsonaro's Brazil, still suffering 1,500 COVID deaths a day, but Brazil's players aren't happy. There are even rumours they're going to refuse to play in the tournament altogether. Luis Suarez, Edinson Cavani have also cast doubt on whether the tournament should be going ahead. The mighty Tim Vickery will explain it all to us in just a few minutes. And of course, coming up later this week, yes, the Euros are coming.
Talk us through that, Steve. I think we know what's happened, but talk us through it.
Robbie Brady against Hugo Lloris. Ireland leading Lyon. What a start. What a perfect start.
Crosses back to the edge of the penalty area.
Into the penalty area.
The only thing that they have got is the big boy up front, Sigurdsson, who really, Sigthorsson.
You're talking about finals.
Final.
You know what I'm talking about.
I'm Declan Rice.
I'm Jack Grealish.
Oh, my word. Oh.
They're all pampered. They're all just headphones.
Oh, just saying. Sigthorsson.
Yes, we always have such a laugh during international competitions, and we'll be going Euros local for the next month, so why not sign up to the Second Captain's World Service right now? No contract, no cancellation fee. You can dip out and dip in whenever you like. Just €5 a month plus VAT, depending on where in the world you're listening to us. So go to secondcaptains.com/join, and you'll get daily shows into your ears every weekday throughout the year. Speaking of the Euros, is this the most chaotic prelude to an international tournament that England have ever had? There's a cohort of their own fans that hate the team. I can only presume the feeling is more than reciprocated. The players aren't going to stop taking the knee. The fans aren't going to stop booing it. Very, very strange indeed, Ken.
Well, when you say there's a cohort, what we're talking about here is the real England fans. You know, I saw Ben Rumsby, the Telegraph journalist, tweeting, "To be clear about the booing, tickets for these friendlies were restricted to members of the England Supporters Club. This is the hardcore fan base who will also have many of the Euros tickets." A leading anti-racism campaigner told me last week the FA has historically shown a lack of appetite to confront its most loyal customers. No surrender chance being another example. So obviously this happened again, as everybody knew it would. Now, what happened since the last time? This is England were playing last night against Romania. They eventually won 1-0 thanks to a penalty by Marcus Rashford, which was supplied to him by Jack Grealish. Dominic Calvert-Lewin later supplied another penalty. However, this was wrested from his hands by Jordan El Capitan Henderson,
yeah.
who I remember watched. I remember watching taking a penalty in Moscow in 2018 in the shootout against Colombia, and he came up to take it. Honestly, I thought, remember, this was a slightly different Jordan Henderson at that stage before he sort of won the big prizes that he since has won with Liverpool, and was still kind of a somewhat dubious, you know, figure in terms of, should this guy really be here? I remember him coming up taking this penalty. It was the most predictable penalty you've ever seen, and the goalkeeper unsurprisingly saved it. And it's actually a technique he has. I don't know how he's able to do it, but he's able to speak his whole language of addressing the ball. His whole body language just communicates powerfully to the goalkeeper exactly where he's going to put it. It's like the exact opposite of what someone like Eden Hazard or Mendieta used to do. It's like a dance between him and the keeper, and somehow the keeper just knows. And that's what happened. And of course, Henderson shouldn't even have been taking this penalty. He just took it because I guess he fancied scoring a goal for England. And maybe, I don't know if he'd heard at this stage about Roy Keane basically saying he shouldn't be there.
We're talking about the final.
Not because he's not good enough, but because he's not fit. You're only supposed to bring fit players, really. And England always do this thing of bringing, like, they always have at least one injured player, you know?
England, it seems that you are very weak.
Jesus, like, without fail, isn't it?
Well,
like, it's you know, instead of a team song, it's now, this is the new tradition. England bring like a severely injured captain or leader type figure to it.
Well, this is it. Like, you know, it's like I mean, previously you can see why they've done it, like, because it's been a player like Rooney who's like, oh my God, but he's our entire attacking inspiration. Or, you know, Michael Owen, oh, we need it. Or Beckham, oh, Beckham is like the whole reason for our team. You know what I mean? These are the players who I'm thinking of were brought to successive World Cups injured, you know, when they were in no condition to play and ended up playing badly and disappointing everybody. And you would have thought with all the players England have, they wouldn't be doing that this time. But the problem is the players who are injured are Harry Maguire and Jordan Henderson. So two out of the three mainstays in the team. The other obviously being Harry Kane, who thankfully for England is not injured. I mean, I say thankfully because Harry Kane is sort of the only consistent member, the only consistently selected player in England's attack. Like, they've got this fantastic situation where they've got so many amazing players, but that's only a fantastic situation if you actually know which of those amazing players you want to use. You know, because it's great having options, but, like, what if you don't know which of them to pick? And there's all kinds of reasons for picking these players and this players, you know what I mean? You know, you've got Rashford and Sterling who've basically been there for the last couple of years. They've been the kind of main guys. Both of them are playing kind of badly. Rashford obviously just scored a penalty, captain of the team, in fact, yesterday. Do you persevere with those guys because you've been trusting them all along? And do you now, even though things have kind of gone against them a little bit, do you show faith in them, show loyalty to them, or do you just bin them? You say, listen, guys, sorry, you know, I know you've, thank you for your service over the last couple of years. It's just that your form has dipped a little bit in the last couple of weeks. And because of that, I'm dumping you and I'm bringing in Grealo.
It's always a joy to play for Ireland.
You know what I mean? Like, Grealo should play very well. Or, you know, he seems to be. But again, he's got like six England caps, I think. Foden, I think, has six or seven caps. Sancho is playing really well. But, like, you know, again, he's a player who's easy, I think, for people, you know, England fans to leave out because he plays in Germany. They sort of just, he kind of doesn't really exist in the imagination.
If he was playing in a proper league, you know, Ken, maybe we'd pick him.
Well, if he was playing somewhere where, you know, a league that they watched, you might remember him. But again, you know, he's a player anyone in any team in the tournament would want. But does he necessarily play? You know, should he? Like, there's all kinds of questions of form and sort of politics and everything that goes in. Anyway, speaking of politics, that's where you started with this. So after the previous game, that was they beat Austria on Wednesday 1-0. I think Southgate had said, and the knee was booed then. Southgate had said something like, well, you know, we might have to look at it again. Basically on the lines of, if this is going to be a divisive thing. But they evidently did have a conversation about it. At which point, like, Southgate came out and said, well, we're more determined than ever to do the knee. Basically, they obviously had consulted with the players, and the players were like, no, we want to keep doing it, especially if they're going to boo it. You know what I mean? So it is, like, in the sense, like, it's a remarkable situation that they now have. Like, before every game, literally every single game will start off with a reminder of this big split in the fan base between people who, well... Like, why should we put words in the mouth of people when they have Nigel Farage to speak for them? Because this is one of those football issues, along with, as he described, the EU of football, which was what he tried to call the Super League. This is one of those issues that gets Nigel Farage's juices flowing. So let's hear what he had to say about why people are booing. This is his explanation for what's going on.
Is that because they're insulting the black members of a team? No, not a bit of it. It's because the great British public have sussed it. They've woken up to the fact that taking a knee to the Black Lives Matter organisation isn't about equality of opportunity, isn't about racial justice. It's about a Marxist organisation that wants to defund the police force, that wants to bring down Western capitalism, bring down our whole way of life and replace it with a new communist order. Over 100 years ago in Russia, class was used. Class division was used as a means of fomenting the 1917 revolution and bringing about the wonderful new communist state that finished up, of course, being one of the most monstrous the world has ever seen. Now they're using race as a means not to bring people together, but actually to divide people. And the soccer fans have woken up to this and they're booing loudly and they will go on booing loudly all summer.
So that, I mean, I know that everyone's sort of used to hearing this sort of stuff over the years, but honestly, just listen to how insane that is. Like, just listen to how insane it is, you know? It's like a slippery slope argument. You know, starting up, the great English football fans have rumbled, right, this conspiracy, this rickety Trojan horse has driven up to the gates, right? And it speaks, it says, oh, please let us in. We're anti-racist. We're anti-racist horse. But as soon as, you know, they let in the anti-racist horse, they're going to jump out and destroy Western civilization, right? Just as they did in Russia.
It is obviously complete nonsense. But that is quite close, I would say, if you ask the people who are booing to their reasons for booing. You know what I mean? Like, the reason might not exist.
Come on. It's a load of, it's bollocks, it's bullshit.
I mean, of course it's bollocks.
The sleight of hand there, because it's the sleight of hand that he's using is when he says specifically to taking a knee to the Black Lives Matter organization. So that's where he inserts the fake piece of, so as though this is what's going on, which is when this is not what's going on, right? There's this very clear attempt to, okay, here's this anti-racist gesture. We don't like it, you know. But we, you know, you can't boo anti-racism as such. So you got to twist it. You got to pretend that it's actually about something other than what it is. You know what I mean? And pretend to drag Black Lives Matter. Have you seen their website? They want to do this, and they want to destroy Western civilization, and put that there as though the whole thing, and even the language around taking a knee to the organization, as though it was some sort of gesture of submission or my liege. You know, like everyone's going my liege to Black Lives Matter. Right, and this is what's going on, and it's actually a plot. It's just going to be like Russia, where, by the way, they use class to divide people. Can you believe class proved such an effective way of whipping up anger in Russia?
A despotic
state ruled by a totally corrupt aristocracy with like millions of serfs, you know what I mean? Like literally slaves. The grandparents' generation were literally the property of the local. You know what I mean? This was like
Black Lives Matter pulled the wool over the eyes of those Russians. To be fair, they really did.
When class consciousness started being raised in this society, it turned out that things started to catch fire pretty fast for some reason, and now they're doing it again here. And you're kind of like, well, okay, The comparison is insane. First of all, it's an insane comparison. But if you want, insofar as you want to make it, then maybe you should reflect on the reasons why this seems to be a powerful mobilizing force in your country.
Yeah, the point though, Ken, I think is just that. Like, I think if you ask these people why they were booing the taking of the knee, this horseshit is what they would repeat to you. I mean, they're getting fed this all the time. So I do kind of feel like, okay, maybe there's a subconscious reason for them booing this. Like they just. You know, like there is a subconscious, perhaps racist reason why they're doing it. But this is like at the conscious level, this is the horseshit they would tell you for why they're booing the taking of the knee.
This is what they tell you. But again, like it's nonsense. This is the thing. This is the thing to remember, right? They're talking nonsense. It's nothing to do with taking a knee to Black Lives Matter. That's what Farr said. That's not what they're doing, right? Listen to what the players say they're doing. You know, listen to the players, and then stop the conspiracy nonsense. You know, it's just fucking like. So it's what I'm saying is it's impossible for me to accept this. Well, you know, I mean, I disagree with you, but I feel as though that's like it's a legitimate set of concerns, and you know, absolutely, you know, if you wish to be, that's fine. No, it's just it's nonsense. You're believing nonsense. You've been led down the garden path. Like, this is not a. You know, it's like Marcus Rashford is not leading like a communist conspiracy to overthrow. That's literally what Farage.
Western
civilization. But don't you hear? That's literally what he's claiming. That's literally what Farage is claiming, like with a straight face. Like just this utterly insane madness. You know what I mean? Actually, what you're doing in effect is booing a bunch of what it feels, as Southgate said in quite simple terms, it feels like a criticism of them, of our black players. Oh, no, well, that's not it. Well, maybe consider how your actions feel, how your actions are perceived by the apparent targets. Oh, no, they're not the targets. We're booing Black Lives Matter. No, you're booing your own players. That's literally what you're doing. Like, wake up to what you're...
Your players are standing in front of you and you're booing them. It's kneeling
divisive.
In front
it's
of
divisive.
You.
It's divisive because of you. You know what I mean? You're the one who's saying it. But, like but again, this is the hardcore. This is a hardcore England fan base.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
To be honest, that's the point I didn't really think about. You know, there as I was watching it, I was like, well, you know, Wembley might be different, but like Wembley's not going to be
different. No, of course it's not going to be different. Why would it be different? You know, because these people like see themselves as being like delusionally, you know, it's Don Quixote. You know, it's like we're the front line. You know, the communists are here. You know, here the play they've got to the players. They've infiltrated the football authorities. You know the players are doing this. That you know they're capturing the sort of they've captured the high ground, the ideological high ground. They're transmitting their communist message everywhere. You know, and we're the troops. We're the ones who can see what's really going on, and that's why we're going to boo Marcus Rashford. You know, or whoever else is there. And it's just like all the ingredients are there for this just to be such a disaster.
Yeah,
like this whole tournament.
So, like to be fair, I thought Southgate has handled it. Like very well over the last couple of days. Like we're going to keep doing it. I mean, someone had tweeted, you know, that there is an alternative timeline when you look back at the last person to have this job other than Gareth Southgate. Like, and can you imagine? Sam,
I
mean,
I was always told if I was Aladicio.
Yeah, I don't think he. Again, I haven't seen Sam Allardyce say anything about it. And Sam Allardyce may be like, look, you know, whatever the players want to do, it's up to the players. That may be his view as far as you know. I wouldn't be surprised necessarily if he was to say, oh, I think this is a load of nonsense, or something like, you know, politics shouldn't be in football or anything like this. I mean, Southgate was saying stuff like, it's not political. I mean, it is, though. You know what I mean? It is a political gesture.
It is when people are booing it.
Well, especially
you know?
So.
And, you know, you wrote a column about it when the Millwall fans were back, was it? And they booed the taking of the knee. And then all of a sudden it's like, well, thank you for making this absolutely relevant again. And, you know, it hardens everyone's resolve to be, well, here's the problem. Like, literally here is the problem. So, it's a crazy way to go into an international tournament. That's what England are doing.
Timbuktu.
Yo, listen up, here's the story.
An old pumpkin.
A little guy that lives in a blue world.
We haven't got leaders.
All day and all night and everything he sees.
They're all just headphones.
Inside and outside, blue.
They don't communicate.
Can't get anything out of them.
That's why we're no good.
Timbuktu.
They're all just headphones.
They don't communicate on the pitch. They don't communicate off the pitch.
They're all pampered.
Oh, we're getting ready for Russia. Good luck.
And then after that, we'll be building a team for Timbuktu.
Timbuktu.
How have England reacted to that equaliser?
Perfectly. No panic. Calm straight down. Continue dominating the game, playing and staying in Iceland's hearts. It's been the perfect response. You'd think that no problem.
England after 4 minutes. And they still lost.
Maggie Thatcher, your guys took a hell of a beating.
Maggie Thatcher. You boys took a hell of a beating.
The only thing that they have got is the big boy up front, Sigurdsson, who really, Sigthorsson.
Oh, my word.
Oh.
Talk us through that, Steve. I think we know what's happened.
Oh, just say, Sigthorsson.
Just cannot. Tim Vickery, great to talk to you as ever.
Lovely to be here.
Can you tell us what is happening with the Copa America? It's supposed to happen. It's supposed to start next Sunday night, I guess, is when it's meant to kick off. Is it actually going to kick off?
Well, I can't tell you what's going to happen because I don't know. And you should get a clearer picture after the next round of World Cup qualifiers come to an end on Tuesday night, because then we're waiting for a statement from Brazil's players. Now, we know that they are opposed to this Copa America. What we don't know is if their statement is going to say we will play under protest or we won't play. If it's we won't play, that obviously has a devastating effect on the Copa, because if that is true, Brazil will not have a team or a coach, because their coach, Chichi, is clearly united with the players in whatever stance they're taking. And if they have decided to boycott the competition, they will also have tried to put pressure on their friends, club teammates and former club teammates from other South American national teams, for them to take a similar position. It's very interesting that the Argentine FA have released a statement saying Argentina will turn up for the Copa, but they've done that while the players are in the air on a flight from Argentina to Colombia. So at the moment, everyone is waiting for this statement from the Brazil team after their World Cup qualifier against Paraguay on Tuesday night.
Yeah, and why is anyone expecting that this might be an actual, you know, as big as Brazil saying we're not going to play? I mean, what are the sort of noises that have come out there so far? So that Casemiro seemed to be saying something, but he seemed to be more, he was sort of hinting. He was like, well, everyone knows our position on the Copa, but everybody doesn't clearly know their position, really.
No, what he's doing there is, look, is saying that the focus is on World Cup qualification and we're not going to make this public until the World Cup qualifier against Paraguay is done and dusted. From the point of view of the Brazilian players, as I understand it, there are three problems. Number one is an internal question. They're not happy with the president of Brazil's FA, Rodrigo Caboclo. Caboclo was with them last Sunday at the point where we waited to find out if the tournament was going to go ahead in Argentina. And at that point, he didn't even mention to the players that there were moves behind the scenes to switch the tournament to Brazil. They found out about this, like the rest of us, on social media the following day. So they're very unhappy at the way that this has been conducted. There are lots of complicating factors here. One is that Caboclo is coming under extreme pressure. He seems very unpopular with almost everyone. He seems very poor in his personal relations. And on Friday, he was formally accused of sexual and moral harassment by one of his workers at Brazil's FA. And he is being advised by some in Brazil's FA to step down. So that's a complicating factor. Some of the Brazilian media are saying that Caboclo has promised to Brazil's president, Jair Bolsonaro, that he will sack the coach, Chichi, on Tuesday. Although Brazil are 5 wins out of 5 so far in World Cup qualification, because Chichi is clearly against the staging of the Copa America. So that's number one. This problem of internal relations inside Brazil's FA. Now we get into the wider points. Number two is clearly the health situation in Brazil. More than 470,000 have lost their lives to the pandemic. The death toll is increasing at a rate of between 1,500 and 2,000 a day. Is this the right time to stage an international tournament? Yes, domestic football is going ahead. But is this the right time for an international tournament? Number three is, well, is this tournament worthwhile anyway? Remembering that especially the European-based players, they are giving up their holidays to appear at the moment in World Cup qualification. And it would seem clear that they are reluctant to give up their holidays for a tournament that they see as less than serious. The common sense solution, unless you're looking at CONMEBOL finance — CONMEBOL is South America's UEFA — the common sense solution would be to use this time that we have now to catch up on World Cup qualifiers. We're well behind the clock. There are a couple of rounds that we still don't know where they're going to be squeezed in between now and the end of March. It would make footballing sense to use this time that you've got the national teams together to catch up on World Cup qualification. And as I understand it, the players would be more than willing to do that. This particular Copa America, though, has always been controversial. It's an extra Copa America. It's not part of the normal schedule. Normally, they're to be held every 4 years. We had one in 7, in 11, in 15 and 19, with an extra one to celebrate the centenary of the competition in 16, which was held in the United States. This one, the original idea, ironically enough, was to take advantage of the switch from odd years to even years, with FIFA wanting to clear a summer, a European summer, for a club World Cup. The Copa is now being brought in line with the Euros. So this one was to be held last year, and it is now due to be held on Sunday. And that means a copper in 15, a copper in 16, a copper in 19, and a copper that should have been in 20, but instead in 21. This is surely overkill. And the tournament is a monstrosity. The original idea, because it's an extra copper, hosting it was up for grabs. It was hugely controversial. Argentina wanted it. Colombia really wanted it. It was split between Argentina and Colombia. Now, that meant two groups, originally two groups of six, and then the invited countries. We always have two coming in to make up the numbers. The invited countries, Qatar and Australia, were forced to pull out because Asia is holding World Cup qualifiers. Catching up on its backlog. So we've now got two groups of five and a group stage that eliminates precisely one team per group. So it's a monstrosity of a competition. And quite understandably, the players are thinking, well, there's the health situation and there's the fact that, we could be on holiday. Why on earth are we spending our time doing this? So these are the three questions: the internal, the health situation, and the lack of importance, the lack of sporting relevance of the competition itself. Put those three together, and I think it's entirely understandable why Brazil's players don't want to play. But as I say, the crux of the matter is whether they'll play under protest or whether they will boycott and try and bring some of their friends from other national teams into this boycott.
What would playing under protest mean? I mean, play. It's essentially just playing the tournament. I mean, I'm sure that the authorities will be happy with that.
They would. And we're dealing with a very authoritarian Brazilian government, I'm not even sure that would make them happy. There are lots of opportunities in press conferences and so on for the players to say, "Look, I really don't think we should be doing this," especially as that group phase goes on forever to eliminate almost no one. What if you're the media there, especially if you're the media without rights to transmission? What's the story during that long group phase? There's almost no sporting story. The story is this all worthwhile? There is a commission of inquiry going on at the moment into the government's, frankly, disgraceful handling of the coronavirus pandemic, and their parts now. They've issued a statement against the Copa America. So it's something which, if it goes ahead, will inevitably be extremely politicized.
Yeah. How did Brazil end up hosting this competition anyway? Because they weren't the hosts until the beginning of this month, I guess, or was it the last day of May? Colombia and Argentina had meant to co-host, which is bizarre given the geographical
6-hour flight between the two capitals. Yeah, I mean, you imagine that at the crossover stage, at the end of the group phase, you're getting teams going either way. Teams going down all the way from Colombia to Argentina, and all the way, the teams that went down all the way from Colombia to Argentina, if they're successful and go back for the final, they've got to go all the way back again. Colombia was forced to pull out because of the wave. And the coronavirus situation in Colombia is also desperate. But it was forced to pull out because of the wave of social unrest in the country. Hmm. CONMEBOL tried as hard as they could to almost like to prove that Colombia could stage games. And South America's Champions League, the Copa Libertadores, was going ahead initially. Games were moved from Colombia, and then games were allowed to go on in Colombia. But it just became a lightning rod for demonstrations. The Colombian government introducing a new tax, the people not liking it, taking to the streets to protest. The Colombian police, really, they've been trained, I think, to take on guerrilla movements and drug cartels, and they're not used to social protest. Overreacted, a huge death toll, the protests grow and grow. So the protests were going on outside these football matches. I mean, there was one football match in Colombia where the first half lasted over an hour and the halftime lasted half an hour because tear gas kept on coming onto the field and interrupting things. So in trying to prove that Colombia could stage games, CONMEBOL managed to prove that Colombia couldn't stage games. So then you think, then the situation is it going to be just Argentina or Argentina plus a co-host? Now that as Argentina goes into what is quite a severe winter, coronavirus is in its worst time. It's the worst moment of coronavirus in Argentina is now. And pressure there was building up. A consensus was building up that this really wasn't the right time to host an international tournament. So Argentina pulled out on the Sunday, meaning that they had to find a country at late stage who could host all 28 games. And really, there was no other option. There had been some talk about the United States, but firstly, the two confederations have fallen out over the COPPA that they held in the States in 16. But also, on the practicality of it, there's just not time to get all the visas sorted out that you need to host a tournament in the States. Yeah. So Brazil then was the only option, and Brazil made itself available. And this is very much part of President Bolsonaro's philosophy, if you like, of keeping as much of the economy open as possible. So CONMEBOL made a point of personally thanking Bolsonaro for opening the doors of his country to this tournament, which has just meant that the whole thing is now thoroughly politicized. And they found it hard to find venues for the matches, both because some state governors, Brazil is divided into states. Some state governors said, no, we're not having it here. We don't want to be part of this. But also, I think a big fear from the government, you'll remember, of course, Ken, that extraordinary protest movement that grew up in 2013 around the holding of the Confederations Cup. And now, with more than 20% of the Brazilian population having been vaccinated for the first time, there's a protest movement against Bolsonaro, which feels confident enough to take to the streets. We had just over a week ago, the first big demonstrations against him. So that was a fear for the government. So they're using four venues. Mostly this is in the kind of Bolsonaro belt, the kind of agro business stranglehold, you know, stronghold. So that they've tried to reduce the risk of political protest during the COPPA, although there was a kind of there was a demonstration. I think it was a largely car passage demonstration against the competition in Brasilia on Sunday. Brasilia is one of the host venues. So it's such a turbulent time, in not just in football politics, but also in Brazilian politics. On the whole thing, and if you were to have presented this a while ago as a script for a Brazilian TV soap opera, it'd have been ruled as thoroughly implausible. Yeah. But the implausible has now come reality.
Yeah. What do you think is the point that Bolsonaro is trying to make by saying, yeah, of course we can host the Copa America, you know, which clearly is a terrible idea. You know what I mean? It's not like, I mean, whatever you're saying about, oh, you know, we want to keep our economy open and so on. This is like, we're stepping in to host a tournament that had nothing to do with us. Like, you know, we're like, what? There's a message being sent here. What is the message?
Well, the message is stop being a bunch of sissies and keep the economy open. It's his message all along. And, if you like, he's doubling down on it. I mean, he's under attack now.
But there's nearly a half a million people have died.
And well, from a PR perspective, you think, you know, because assuming this COPPA goes ahead, the half million figure will be reached during the COPPA. No, but he's doubling down on it. I mean, we wondered what he would do after the defeat of Donald Trump, because he's so identified with Trump. And now it looks as if is another one of his Netanyahu may be on his way out as well. And I think some in Brazil are kind of egged on by this. It's like, you know, now we're the leaders of this international neo far right conservatism. And it seems to be egging them on. As I say, he's under attack from this congressional commission of inquiry looking into the government's handling of the coronavirus. When it's one horror story after another. Some of the stuff that is coming out of this it's barely believable. They had an app that they tested. It was an app where you put in your symptoms and it recommended chloroquine.
hydroxychloroquine, the
malaria drug. Yeah. Whatever the symptoms were, right. It recommended this malaria drug, which has no effectiveness, but they're still promoting. They spent a lot of money on it. The former health minister in this commission of inquiry said that, this app wasn't supposed to be released, but someone hacked it and released it without our knowledge. You know, it's right. The dog ate my homework. They had offers from Pfizer for vaccines. And Brazil could have been, with this something we found out during the course of the commission of inquiry, Brazil could have been the first country to start vaccination. And they had huge offers from Pfizer. You know, Brazil, with the size of its population and a very, very good vaccination infrastructure, Brazil was an obvious place for the vaccine makers to want to sell their product. They didn't reply. There were email after email after email, and they didn't reply. And one of the lines they come out with in this commission of inquiry was, there was a virus in our computer. You know, as if the entire government thing is run on one computer. I mean, it really is the dog ate my homework. And it's just an astonishing tale of incompetence. So he's coming under attack from that. And this is his way of doubling down.
You said that he wanted Chi-Chi sacks. What? Like, you know, you'd think he's got enough on his plate, but he also wants to get rid of the popular and, you know, pretty competent coach of the national
team. This is media speculation. There's nothing official there, although it's coming from pretty good sources. Brazil's coach, the vast majority of players have been Bolsonaro supporters.
Yeah.
Brazilian football is a furiously right-wing world. Actually, while we're here, I wonder now how there's a couple of former players from the national team who very much Bolsonaro supporters who've watched parents die from COVID. I wonder how they're thinking. I wonder if they're not losing sleep over this, then I think they should be. But anyway, Chi-Chi is an exception. In that he's treading on eggshells, and he's very, very diplomatic, but it is clear that he is not a Bolsonaro supporter. It's clear. So an authoritarian government would like to get rid of him, I think. Certainly that is the speculation. And what is really interesting here, and if this goes ahead, let's imagine, and we are totally in the realm of speculation, because, as I say, and Bolsonaro can't sack Chi-Chi. That's not in his remit.
Mm.
But Rodrigo Caboclo, the head of Brazil's FA, can. That is within his remit. And this is what sources in the Brazilian media are saying. He's promised Bolsonaro that he will do this, although Brazil are 100% in World Cup qualification.
Mm.
What do the players do then? Because I would imagine that the loyalty of the players, whatever their political sympathies, is more to their coach than it is to any political figure. They played on Friday. It was a tough game against Ecuador. They had to work hard to break Ecuador down. But when they scored in the second half, the players, they made such a point of running to the coach and celebrating with the coach. Mm. It's clear that the position of the players is the same as the position of the coach. So let's imagine that the coach is sacked. What do the players do then? I would imagine that the players then will also boycott this Copa America. Brazil can get in another coach. And there is one who's available, Renato Portaluppi, until recently the coach of Grêmio, who is publicly associated with Bolsonaro. The fun and games there is that, let's say that happens and they need an entirely new squad.
Mm.
The Brazilian clubs will then go ape, because the Brazilian championship is happening. You know, so it will have to be, I'd imagine, a domestically based squad.
And you think that's something they would actually do? They'd whip together a scab team to replace the protesting. Well,
how can it go on without the hosts? How can you have a competition?
Well, I mean, you would have thought at that point, like, lads, like our hosts have pulled out. our teams have pulled out. Like, we actually have to face the fact that we don't have a competition anymore, guys. Someone's going to have to bite that bullet and you know, just accept it.
One would have thought so, but all the countries, just for turning up, they get $4 million.
Yeah.
Now, for the lesser associations in South America, that's a lot of money. You know, that solves a lot of problems. And that's one of the reasons why I think that the stuff against the Copa so far, it's come out of the Uruguay camp, especially the Uruguay, very, very politicized. Argentina, Brazil, the Chile coach and the Peru coach have both slammed it as well. Interesting to see what the, you know, but if you're Bolivia, you know, let's go there and let's get our $4 million, you know.
Let's get our $4 million. Could they not serve? See, what I wonder is, what is the financial impact of this? Because I can see why CONMEBOL, for instance, is so desperate for this to happen. It's the same reason there's all this football everywhere. Like, the Euros are the same, you know. It's just like, crank it out. Like, it's got to happen, you know, because we've signed all these deals and this thing's going to happen, even though there's clearly way too much and the players are becoming exhausted. But in this case, if we're talking about $4 million, like, what is the financial impact on CONMEBOL?
Well, they're going to lose money anyway. You know, they're already going to lose money on this. Yeah, no, they really wanted 30% stadium capacity. And that was in before Colombia and Argentina pulled out. That was a negotiation that was going on between CONMEBOL and the FAs of Colombia and Argentina. Can you find a way to give us 30% stadium capacity? So, and with also with Qatar and Australia pulling out, they've lost. So they're going to lose money on the competition anyway, but they took a hit last year. They don't want to take a hit this year. Sometimes, you know, it's a pandemic. You know, you got to roll over and take a hit.
Yeah.
Because if it goes ahead in the way that it's going ahead, you've devalued your product so much. You know, you've got to sell it again in the next time round. Oh, do you expect everyone to just forget what has happened this time? It ain't going to happen.
Well, maybe, you know, people do forget pretty much everything else immediately. That is true. Maybe there is hope in that.
Well, I don't know. I don't know if there's hope anywhere. I don't know. We're just living in such weird times. And as I say, there is a common sense get out. And as I understand it, the players will go along with this. Use this time to catch up on World Cup qualification. Because at the moment, you know, we'll play the sixth round on Tuesday night. We've got another 12 rounds to fit in before the end of March. Where are they all going to go? They've invented an extra FIFA date in
January.
But
did you say there are 12 South American World Cup qualifiers to play between now and March?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Well, there you go. So that's six double headers. At the moment, I'm enjoying your
it's just insane. I mean, I sort of can't believe that they haven't gone, well, you know, at least we can play those qualifiers, you know, when we should be playing.
Exactly. Now, but let's do the maths. That's six double headers because they play them as double headers. Okay. Yeah. We've got five dates. We have September, October, November. They've invented an extra one at the end of January. And we've got the end of March. Those are the FIFA dates available.
Another South American World Cup qualifying. Yeah, okay, right. Okay.
So it looks like what they're going to try and do is fit in an extra game to some of these double headers.
Right.
So instead of playing two games over the FIFA date period, you'll play three. Now, this is the European national teams often do this.
Yeah, we've started doing that recently. And
look at the map, Ken. Look at the map.
It's a bit smaller.
No, South America is vast. It's huge. How on earth are you going to do it? You've got to get the players all the way across the Atlantic. You've got to, you know, and then you're talking about two journeys inside South America in just a few days, then going back. How do you do it? It doesn't make sense. Common sense would be play the World Cup qualifiers now. Players will be quite happy with it. They'll go along with it. And it is actually genuinely touching to see the importance that Brazil's players are at the center of the storm, the importance that they place on World Cup qualification. It is genuinely touching, you know, that they want to make their position clear, but they're not going to do it out of respect for the task ahead of them. They're going to wait until after the game against Paraguay. And Casemiro said after the Venezuela game that as far as we're concerned, this is already the World Cup. This is important. And it is genuinely touching, I think, the love that these players have for, you know, in their holiday period, coming back up, back across the Atlantic to play World Cup qualifiers.
Yeah.
They're happy to do it if it means something. If they're being used purely and simply for CONMEBOL to make money and for their associations to make money in, you know, the almost like the dreaded word of these modern times, content. But content that doesn't really have any content that they're not happy with.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Well, listen, Tim, I hope this tournament doesn't happen. I hope it doesn't. But if it does, you know, let's talk about it.
Let's talk about it. There'll be plenty to talk about, and it won't all be what's happening on the field.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, Tim, listen, always great to talk to you, and thanks for bringing us up to speed and all that.
My pleasure.
Good luck for everyone, and here it goes.
Yammer.
Denmark, Republic of Ireland.
When we look down at the Irish squad, it's not that many names that ring a bell. We have the slight upper hand in these two games.
But I'll tell you something, he went down in my estimation when he said that.
We have the slight upper hand in these two games.
I've never heard so much rubbish in my life. Why do we have to listen to that garbage?
We have not resorted to that.
It's always tough to play any British team.
Can I appeal to the British government to please leave our country?
It's always tough to play any British team.
A lot of things have been said over the last few days. Some of it slanderous.
I mean, I actually was abused by a Dane as well the night before.
Come on, Ken.
Is there a Wi-Fi?
Actually, we're just on the 3G.
Before we could finish explaining we weren't actually on the Wi-Fi, he goes, Wi-Fi wankers! You're all Wi-Fi wankers!
In the second game in Ireland, they wanted to go forward, but of course they knew what happened when they went forward, so that's probably why they're too scared to go forward.
You cheeky bastard!
No respect! No honor!
They're too scared to go forward.
You put hard times on this country! You don't know what hard times are, Daddy!
But I can say it's at least €100,000 in cash.
Our computer is telling us that they go to Group D.
I'm having a ball floundering around. Anyone wants to knock, give me a shell.
Got a chance for revenge, haven't I?
Every game is obviously tough, so...
Boring.
First, I thought you cheeky bollocks, to be quite honest.
They're like polished wood, these seats. I sat in them. I had my beer in my hand, and then I was reaching for my friends. I had a bottle of wine.
Declan Rice.
The young fella makes me so angry.
There's no sense, he's as bold as a pig.
I hate them. Not the country. Yeah. No, I hate Denmark, the country.
I would be lying if I said I was looking forward to it.
All right, Ken, what's the most read article on the Guardian Sports website this morning, I reckon? Obviously, the England team are at war with its fan base. The England cricket team finished its first test of the summer yesterday. So the obvious answer to that question is...
It must be something about Logan Poyle? Poyle and Floyd. Floyd Mayweather, Logan Poyle. It's something to do with that.
Absolutely correct.
I saw that Logan Poyle avoided defeat. Logan Paul did not lose to Floyd Mayweather, apparently.
No.
So what happened there? Like,
after 50 professional bouts, 50 professional wins, Floyd Mayweather's perfect record is gone. He didn't knock him out. There was no judges' scorecards.
There was no judges.
Yeah.
There was no scorecards. What was this thing?
I'm starting to think this isn't a serious sporting event, Ken. It resulted in it ended in a chorus of boos. I literally don't know what they were booing. I mean, you know, is it kind of like a rare moment of introspection? I'm booing myself. This is what's
the lack
going
of
on
a result, I suppose, a draw or whatever, then I suppose you're booing.
Yeah.
But like, I mean...
The report that I read on The Guardian, and before I saw that it was the most read by a country mile on The Guardian website, I had actually already read the article.
Right.
So, I mean, I can't stand here in judgment of the Guardian readership. I mean, how upset can we get about rich people separating very silly people from their money, though? I mean, I think it's a vexed question, and perhaps one for a day other than a lovely bank holiday Monday.
Yeah.
So all that remains now, Ken, is for me to thank you.
Thank you too, Kieran.
Thanks a million for listening, and Owen will be back with you tomorrow.
If you said black, he'd say white. If you said white, he'd say black.
Well, there was a suggestion that there was sort of an all-you-can-eat sort of a thing going on.
You can't argue with people like that.
Jack, if I can start by asking you, when you took over the Republic of Ireland job, did you set out any particular aims for yourself and for the team?
It's the best thing in the world for you because it's full of protein. You can have one drink, no more, and then you're back to the hotel and you're off to bed.
There's been suggestions recently that there was no major problem with players, with what players did a couple of days before a game.
But we always, on the way back, the lads would start to sing, "We love you, Jackie, we do." Which meant, can we stop for a pint? But I'm a creep.
I'm a winner. Jack, I want to ask you about Brian Kerr. Were the hotels besieged by fans and all that sort of thing when they went out on the town? Now, I wanted to get your thoughts on this because times certainly seem to have changed over the last 10 or 15 years as regards player preparation and the rest of that.
Not at all. I don't like people like him.
Back in your time, there was that famous Harry Ramsden's challenge, which has been talked about many times, and there was a suggestion that there was sort of an all-you-can-eat sort of a thing going on.
All-you-can-eat sort of a thing going on.
And we came back into Dublin, and when we were coming in, I said to the lads, do you want some fish and chips?
With all the Celtic Tiger and everything that's happened in Ireland, that we've actually changed as a people.
It was more a vote than anything else. I was at Harry Ramsden's the other night, and it was brilliant.
And we're more selfish, maybe, and a bit more mean and a bit more greedy.
So we stopped for fish and chips. What's wrong? Whatever you want. Stopping for fish and chips the day before the game. You're so fucking special. You get a plate full of fish and chips and you eat the fish and chips if you want them. Nobody had any soup to start with, nobody had any puddings to finish with. They had fish and chips. And I like fish and chips. And the players like the fish and chips. I think it was because the following day we lost the game. No, you can't blame fish and chips for losing the game.
No.
Can you?
For News Talk 106 Sport, I'm Owen McDevitt.
Which phone is that? That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys. It is not war and death and famine. It's not that at all. It's the opposite of that. It's the persuaders of the world outside of that. That's why sport's important.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market. Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.